We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a review from a dissatisfied customer of an online florist, read by Corrie Caulfield.
This was supposed to be a luxury bouquet, but when it arrived, it was much more like a medium supermarket bouquet. It was for a lady at work who'd just had a baby and she was very disappointed with it.
Thanks to James Hunter from Darvel in Ayrshire for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and Charlie Higson. And opposite them, on my left, Sarah Kendall and Lucy Porter. Susan, who's saying bye-bye to campaigning?
There are two exciting by-elections in England this week, in Copeland and in Stoke, which will, as political commentators might say, test the temperature of the country by sticking a thermometer right up it. Now, at the time of recording of this show, we don't know who's going to have won the by-elections, but judging by recent elections, it'll either be won by the Emperor from Star Wars or Ebola. Something cheerful like that. Both are currently Labour seats, and the big discussion is, will the Conservatives win one or both of them? There's been some fairly colourful characters involved in the elections. Paul Nuttall of UKIP has suggested there's a media conspiracy out to suggest that he isn't what he says he is. And all I know is that it's just one of those things that happens when you've led such a varied life as he has. I mean, I think we all remember him standing in front of those tanks in Tiananmen Square. We all remember him. The Labour candidate hasn't covered himself in glory either in Stoke. It is Gareth Snell called the panellists on Loose Women squabbling surface ladies and described Janet Street Porter as a polished turd. Now, the interesting thing about that is that the Labour Party still think Jeremy Corbyn is the reason they're going to lose that constituency. I mean, we don't know what's going to be happening. It could be a clean sweep by the Conservatives, and it could be another example, perhaps some might say, of the unelectability of the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn. Some might say that.
They were saying in Copeland they're worried about Jeremy Corbyn because of his stance on nuclear power, because, you know, he's opposed to nuclear power, he doesn't want anything to do with it, which is the same as his stance on political power. Of course. They also said they're worried at Storm Doris. They're worried that Storm Doris will affect things. And apparently bad weather is more likely to affect the Labour turnout. Mm. Which is really... What is the science
behind
it?
It's just to do
that?
With the times of day that people tend to vote, apparently.
Oh, is it? I just thought it was Labour voters are lighter. Snowflakes.
I vote by post, so for just such eventualities, I always vote by post. Also to avoid people, so...
Okay, so in Australia, it's compulsory.
To vote?
To vote, yeah. It's compulsory. You get fined if you don't go out and vote.
What an excellent country Australia is.
Well, we are the birthplace of democracy, so...
I mean, weather's always had an impact on elections. So Zach Goldsmith, of course, he famously lost his seat in Richmond North because on polling day there was a formation of clouds that seemed to say, remember when Zach ran a low-key racist campaign for London Mayor? It often counts against people. So can we just... What the big controversies being then during these two by-election campaigns we've had?
Well, Paul Nuttall...
said things.
Yeah. The thing for Paul... You do feel sorry for him because he did lose all his family on the Titanic, but you do also...
He did those photographs recently where he was sort of dressed as a English gent with a cap and sort of mustard waistcoat. And somebody on Twitter said... He looked like one of those German spies who parachute into Britain in the Second World War and arrested within about 20 minutes because no Englishman actually looks like
that. The reclamation by UKIP of Tweed is very unfortunate for the lesbian community because that's essentially our Saturday night outfit. If you've got... If you're going somewhere nice, you wear your tweeds. A nice three-piece suit, maybe some plus fours if it's a very posh event. And now you can't because UKIP are wearing tweed all the time. And I don't want anyone to think I'm a lesbian UKIP voter. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. The unknown quantity, though, I have to say, in these by-elections is Storm Doris, of course, which hit on Thursday. And that could affect the turnout. The funniest thing for me was watching the Twitter feed, because Euston Station was closed for some time, and my Twitter feed was full of journalists panicking. One BuzzFeed journalist said, our coverage of the Stoke by-election will be coming from the Nando's outside Euston. So...
We did have... we had a tree down in our road.
Did you?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I know.
This is a country with such mild weather. Oh. They got it.
Well, we still... Who remembers? Was it 86 or 87?
87, yeah.
Oh, do you remember 87?
What happened in 87, guys? What happened?
You weren't here. Right. You don't deserve to know.
Oh, what you got to tell me?
So it was amazing.
It was really bad. But the reason they name it things like Doris, apparently, is that we feel more of a connection to the storm, because if they just say there's a storm coming, no one pays any attention. But when they call it like a name like Doris, everyone goes, oh, is Doris here yet? And it's a way of meteorologists tricking us into caring about the weather, and it's really bloody worked, I think.
They have also meteorologists sounded like they know people.
Yeah. Because you need to know when to go and panic buy bread and milk. Which is, of course, what you do in the event of an emergency. When there was someone forecast some snow in Glasgow at Christmas, and there wasn't a pan loaf to be found, Miles. Really? It was extraordinary. I had to live off oatcakes for a couple of hours.
Unaccountably, this is the double by-election in Stoke Central and Copeland, or as they're calling it, literally nowhere, Super Thursday. The results will have been announced by the time we go to air, so who knows what kind of world you're now living in. Maybe one in which UKIP have won Stoke, maybe one in which the Tories have taken Copeland, or one in which Jeremy Corbyn has been banished to live out the rest of his days on an island, making jam and remembering the good old days when he once made a speech on a fire engine. During the by-election in Stoke, both of the candidates made major gaffes. UKIP's Paul Nuttall lied about Hillsborough, and Labour candidate Gareth Snell used rude language about Brexit. Frankly, they couldn't have offended Northern voters more if they'd strapped Billy Elliot to a skip full of burning whippets and fired it. And then fired it into a Harry Ramsden's. Copeland was seen as a two-way race between Labour and the Conservatives, who are a surprisingly popular party in Cumbria, given that their annual advice to flood victims is essentially, have you tried growing gills? Storm Doris caused havoc in the UK on Thursday, and there were concerns that it could affect voter turnout. The weather was projected to be at its worst in the evening, which is particularly troublesome for Labour, as working-class voters traditionally vote between tea and 10 p.m. Just to clarify, that is between supper and question time. 2 points! Charlie, who's peering at the bill before we leave?
Ah, this is about Game of Thrones, isn't it? Well, that's what it looked like. It's yes, Theresa May sitting in at the House of Lords discussing Brexit, and she's sitting there, there's sort of steps in front of the Queen's throne, which looks very much like the throne in Game of Thrones. For those people who don't know what Game of Thrones is, it's a television programme. Ian McShane, who guest starred in it, basically described it as tits and dragons.
But this is how you see the House of Lords.
Well, this is that's certainly what it looked like. But there's a character in it, the Queen, Cersei, who has sort of ended up as Queen by default because everyone else around her has either been killed or thrown themselves out of a window, which is kind of what happened with Theresa May. It was... found herself there running the country. And Cersei is a very, very evil character. I think you implied earlier that Theresa May looked a bit like Emperor Palpatine in Star Wars.
Well, some might say that.
You know, I don't like political satire that's based on what people look like. That's not really in-depth. It always used to be, oh, John Prescott, he's so fat, isn't he? And that was the level of political satire. But Theresa May does look like she's dead. And sitting there in the House of Lords, it was like death. That death had come into the room, and she was sitting there with her hands clasped, kind of staring at them all. Like Queen Cersei in Game of Thrones, just thinking, I'm going to kill them all.
They said it was a surprise visit.
Yeah.
Surprise! But it wasn't like a proper surprise visit. Like, a proper surprise visit would be if they'd wheeled in a large birthday cake and she'd popped out in a gold bikini singing happy birthday. That would have been a proper surprise.
That would have been a shock.
A shock to everyone.
That would have half-emptied the place, just some sort of and coronaries.
I don't like it if she'd done a proper surprise, like she'd swung down from the ceiling, or if she'd ripped off a mask and kind of displayed herself.
She was David Cameron.
She was David Cameron.
She didn't stay the full distance, though, did she? No. She popped in, and then
they went on for like 20 hours or something like that. I
mean, yeah, it went the whole thing. It went on for 2 days. It went on till midnight both nights. But it could only go on till midnight because after that, that's when the lords turned back into mice.
How did it seem to you, Sarah, as someone who comes as you famously from the birthplace of
democracy? The birthplace of democracy. it was just high drama, as you say. It was just so malevolent. I kind of feel like the next phase of that is sort of picking her teeth with a switchblade whilst the. Sort of eyeballing someone while she puts out a cigarette on her tongue.
Do you know, if Theresa May put out a cigarette in her tongue, it would make me feel a lot better about her being Prime Minister. If the party political broadcast was just her going, Brexit means Brexit. I think she means that.
Yeah,
she means that.
It really does mean Brexit, doesn't it? We've had Lord Lamont. What did he say? Lovely Norman Lamont. We've not seen of.
It's lovely, isn't it? That's what I like about watching it. Is it's like, oh, it's Norman Lamont. Oh, it's Nigel Lawson. It's like someone's taken a blowtorch to a load of old spitting image puppets. Yeah. They're all like the same as they were in the 80s, but different. Yeah. Very, I don't know what he said there.
They are our last resort, though. To be fair, it's like in Star Wars where Luke Skywalker's going down that channel to get the Death Star, and there's just a small porthole, and you're like, shoot it through, Luke. Mm. That's the House of Lords. I'm shouting, shoot it through, Lords. Shoot it through.
It's exactly like the end of Xanadu. The end of Xanadu.
Yes!
Where
yes!
It's like, skate, Olivia. You got to skate.
Yes.
And they were like, if you don't, yeah. Then who will? Who's going to skate?
I've not seen either of these things, but it's... They're things. It sounds a bit like croquet, where people say you need to hit it through the thing. Peripherally, this is the news that the House of Lords has passed the Brexit bill at the second reading. It now goes to the committee stage, after which comes the third reading and then the swimsuit round. The debate lasted 20 hours, and I didn't miss a second of it, apart from a brief 10-hour period in the middle where I fell into a sleep so deep that I could only be roused with smelling salts, violent shaking and fire. Norman Lamont urged Lords to pass the bill. Either you believe in democracy or you do not, he told the collection of ermine-clad aristocrats, bishops and party donors. Theresa May sat in the chamber during the debate, which was seen by some as a bit heavy-handed, although it was a step down from her original plan to hover above the Lords on a wire, bellowing, "Do not disobey me! Behold my vengeful wings!" 2 points to Charlie. Sarah, who is saying, "I don't"?
Oh, yeah, this is a story about a heterosexual couple who lost their appeal to have a civil partnership. And it was denied on the grounds that they weren't a same-sex couple, so they could get married. And they felt that marriage wasn't right for them because there were so many inequalities in marriage. And I think the really important part of a story like this is whether you're gay or straight or bi, whether you're married or in a civil partnership, whoever you spend your life with is just going to drive you insane. It's great that you would aim for equality, but I just think when two humans live together, one of them will take the piss. And if you don't know who that is in your personal situation, you're the one taking the piss. You know, it starts great. It starts with romance and lots of sex, and we all end up in the same goddamn place. You know, the 5 mils of milk left in the fridge, like that's enough milk to not have to go out and buy more milk. Or, Miles, shoes left next to a shoe rack. Like, the shoe rack, it has shoes all over it. But the shoes are left next to the shoe rack. Not on... It's called a shoe rack, and it is literally filled with shoes. But the shoes are next to the shoe rack,
Miles. If it's filled with shoes, there aren't space for any more shoes. That's why I had to go next to the shoe rack, Sarah. I'm not taking sides.
You move the flip-flops out of the way, and you put the muddy shoes. I think, you know, it's just taking the piss, you know? And then you have kids, because you think we should have kids. Let's have kids. And then... I just think we should all be sterilised and live in mud huts and just wait for the species to die out. Yeah, well. I'm sorry, Mars. It's just I've just been through half term, all right? Yeah.
To me, I would be questioning my relationship if, rather than get married, my partner would want to go to the High Court. I'll never forget the day my husband got down on one knee and asked the question every woman dreams of hearing: would you like to get embroiled in a time-consuming and costly legal battle to make a point about equality? There is a point to it, and I do understand that you want something that doesn't have all that kind of baggage of the patriarchy. But on the other hand, if you get married, you do get to wear a nice dress and people give you presents.
That's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
Civil partnerships are really the only thing that we've been allowed to have for a long time. It's slightly ironic that heterosexuals suddenly want something that us gays actually have. I mean, what are they going to want next? Centuries of oppression and torture? You can have that, heterosexuals.
We have taken
but
most
really,
of you say days.
Civil partnerships are the only thing we have, apart from, of course, the ability to control the weather and flood the Lake District, which we always enjoy doing around January to February of every year.
What I love about the story is that the sort of alt-right bigot brigade can't work out whether they should be getting cross or not about this.
Yes.
Because here we've got these two snowflake do-gooder liberals wasting their time in the courts, and we should be having a go at them. But hang about, are they subtly having a go at the gays? Because they're saying, oh, well, that's not equality if they've got something that we can't. So it's kind of like, oh, do I get cross? Do I make a... And it's sort of short circuits.
I tell you, when someone subtly has a go at the gays, it's when they take Kylie Minogue off the jukebox. Is if I constantly read that equal marriage is perverted and it's a slippery slope and the morals of society will be destroyed. My wife texted me the other day and said, I've bought us some collapsible Tupperware. We are just as dull as you are. It's not all sex, swings and dildos, I'll tell you that.
Owlishly, this is the news that a heterosexual couple have lost their Court of Appeal battle to have a civil partnership instead of a marriage. Rebecca Steinfeld and Charles Caden reject marriage on the grounds it's sexist and patriarchal. Me too, but when else do you get the chance to scam a distant cousin out of a free wok? Civil partnerships were introduced by the last Labour government, though, of course, at the time, no one realised it was going to be the last Labour government. Of course marriage is sexist. If it wasn't steeped in patriarchal tradition, I would have been able to opt for the dress of my dreams for my big day and been allowed to shine like the diamond that I am. 2 points. To Sarah. And at the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Charlie have 4, but Sarah and Lucy have 5. We start round two with a job advert from a recruitment agency.
Ballet Ireland is seeking a flexible candidate for the post of general manager.
Our thanks to Helen McVie from Dublin for that. Susan, who has said love isn't supreme?
This is a decision by the Supreme Court. Gosh, they're in the news a lot these days, aren't they, the Supreme Court? They're doing awful well. It's a decision by the Supreme Court about spousal visas. The more you say that, it sounds more like an entry to the Eurovision Song Contest. Next up, spousal visas with Je suis un chou-fleur. Spousal visas. So if I, as a UK citizen, married someone who was not from the EEA, let's say, for example, petulant dreamboat Donald Trump. Let's say I married Donald Trump. And why not? He seems like a very caring fellow. So we got married, myself and Donald Trump, in a ceremony accompanied by the sound of a million feminists screaming in the background. And let's say I wanted to bring him to this country, and again, why not? He seems like a lovely chap. I would have to prove, in order for him to get a visa, that I earned over £18,600 to get the visa for him. Now, let's say Donald and I, as part of our passionate relationship, had children, and why not? They'll probably be called something like regret and remorse. Let's say we had two children. I'd have to prove I earned an additional £3,600 for the first child and £2,400 for each further child. So in the past, if you wanted a spousal visa, je suis un chauffeur, you just had to prove your spouse would not be dependent on the state, whereas now you have to prove you earn a certain amount of money. And the reason I chose Donald Trump, apart from just the charisma, is it doesn't matter how much the spouse earns or could earn, it's all about you as the UK citizen. There is a chink of light, because they are saying they have to look at the legislation, because the worry is that spouses and, more importantly, the children will be separated, families will be separated because of this £18,600 limit. But what they are saying is that it isn't illegal for the government to put this in place in order to get a spousal visa.
What do you, I mean, in your position, for instance, Sarah, are you, I mean, are you effectively an economic migrant?
What am I?
Do you have your own visa?
I mean, have. Should you be here?
They're asking
not
how
sure
much you earn.
Now is the time to discuss this. No, I have indefinite leave to remain. So I started out when I first got here on a work visa, because I came over to steal work from British comedians.
But then you stole our hearts.
And then I did. And then your minds.
It's not going to help you when you're thrown in the pokey candle that you've stolen
not,
our hearts.
It's not going to help at all. What I do, I got a definite leave to remain, which was 2 years, and then I bumped that up to indefinite leave to remain, so I had to go through another legal process with indefinite leave to remain, and that was because my partner was English, and then I could go up to citizenship, but I can't be bothered. Seems like you have to answer a lot of questions, and I don't test well, if I'm honest. I think it's an opportunity to say funny stuff, and it doesn't go down well. Simply wasting everyone's time, I think, is the way most official authorities regard it.
You've spent a lot of time in Croydon, haven't you, my birthplace?
I did. Mm. Yeah, because that was where the big office was.
That's what all people who've ever won the right to remain here all say. The good thing about it is I never have to go back to Croydon again. I like the fact, Susan, that you chose Donald Trump as your example there.
That was
because,
amazing.
Because, of course, him and his wife can afford to live together, but she doesn't want to.
Yeah. I just think, you know, sometimes when you see a lot of someone, you start wondering if you could do it. You know, if you had to. Like, I sometimes think, if someone pointed a gun at me and said, you have to sleep with Donald Trump or shoot yourself. I mean, right now I would shoot myself, but... As time goes on, it's amazing what you find attractive in another person. You know, and I'm starting to... The hand gestures. Yeah. I'm just saying.
What about you, Charlie? Bullet or Trump?
I'd have his wife.
Well, you can't say fairer than that. Vivaciously, the Supreme Court has ruled that the government's minimum income immigration requirement, which stipulates that those wishing to bring a partner from outside the EEA must earn at least £18,600, does not breach human rights legislation. This may seem unfair until you remember that £18,600 per annum is the income threshold beyond which the human being unlocks the capacity to love. I wish this policy had existed when I was at school. It would have made it much easier to explain to my friends why the girl I definitely met on holiday couldn't come back to the UK. If I'd have known that dowries were coming back, I wouldn't have got rid of all of my oxen. Who am I kidding? They left me. The case of a wealthy Brit marrying a foreigner and still ending up living on benefits was recently dramatised in a series called The Crown. The justification is that the minimum threshold of £18,600 ensures that families are able to play a full part in British life. As a father of five who's frequented Legoland Windsor, I concur that this is the minimum amount needed, and that is only if you avoid the gift shop. The grotesque Danish mercenaries. 2 points to Susan. Charlie, have a listen to this. Life-changing. Don't think I'll ever recover. Charlie, who should have kept his pie hole shut?
Ah, yes, well, I think we all know this one. Is the Sutton goalie, known as the roly-poly goalie, Wayne Shaw. Sutton, of course, who played Arsenal. It was a kind of dream match of a lifetime for them. They're in a league that is below all other leagues, or so they're way, way down. But they've managed to fight their way through in the... The FA Cup, is it?
Yes.
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 They have this reserve goalie called Wayne Shaw, who's 45 and weighs 25 stone. And he was working also, he was kind of a groundsman and he was hoovering the seats before the game because he's so devoted to this club. And he's, I suppose he's a kind of mascot for them. And he became big news before the game. Everybody got very excited about him. And Sun Bets came up with a really wizard scheme where they offered odds 8-1 of would Wayne Shaw be caught eating a pie during the match? And so comes half-time, he thinks, well, yeah, I'll eat a pie. Be quite funny. And he told a few of his mates he was going to do it. And he ate a pie, and, of course, they made some money out of it on the bet. But you can't do a bet on something like that someone can just do. Mm. And, you know, it's like putting a bet of, like, 10-1 that Charlie Higson's going to wear a hat tomorrow. It's insane.
It'd be like if someone said to me, oh, you know, can you slip the name of a Michael Jackson album into the news quiz tonight? I wouldn't do that because it would be bad and dangerous. But, you know...
Lucy, this behaviour is off the wall. No.
But are these, you know, your greatest hits? No, that doesn't work.
What's happened now is that, you know, he's been investigated. He's had to resign because the club threatened to sack him because he told his mates, yeah, all right, I'll eat a pie. But he was screwed either way because whatever he did was going to affect the outcome of that bet. Mm. If he didn't eat a pie, he was playing into the Sun's hands. They were going to get all this money from the bet. And if it was like a sort of weird Kafkaesque nightmare short story.
Well, yeah, because the Sun... I mean, basically, it's the Sun... It's Sun Bets buying the publicity. So whatever they pay out in the bets, they've got all that publicity. And it just seemed... It was so heartbreaking what happened to him, because it's always horrible to see a young sportsman cut down in his prime... peak of physical health, you know, for using a banned substance. I mean, normally it's not steak and ale, but, you know...
The Gambling Commission Enforcement Officer and Intelligence Director, a guy called Richard Watson, said, integrity in sport is not a joke. Where has he been for the last 10 years? God's sake.
I mean, yes. It was just such a, you know, I can say this as an immigrant to your country, it was just such a British news story. I was looking through the news stories and basically the future of the Fourth Estate hangs in the balance in the United States. And then the first thing I saw of the British news was FA Cup pie-eating scandal.
What other hot snack controversy has there been this week involving the president of Iceland in this instance? Anyone aware of this scandal?
I don't know.
Oh, well, you've been too pie-focused. President Johannesson was taking questions from students at a high school in North Iceland, and a pupil asked him what he thought about pineapple as a pizza topping.
Oh, yes, I did read this.
Well, he went mad.
Yes.
He expressed his disdain. He said if he had the power to pass laws, honestly, I assumed he did. he said that he would ban it across the land. Yeah. It's been pretty.
I think he's right.
I totally agree. Pineapple's I didn't know other
disgusting.
People felt so strong.
Oh, are you
basically
mad?
Anti-Hawaiian
pineapple
sentiment.
On a pizza.
Pineapple a Hawaiian?
No,
it's disgusting.
It doesn't. You don't put fruit on a pizza. You don't have a banana pizza or orange pizza. Like it's a
I
citric
think
fruit.
But Hawaiian.
No.
That is so exotic. It's tropical.
No.
Cheese and pineapple are they occur together in the wild.
That's like saying. Seeing a Hawaiian pizza is exotic is like saying a Viennetta is a true taste of Italy. It's not...
Zestfully, this is the story of Sutton United substitute goalkeeper Wayne Shaw, who was sacked for eating a pie on the touchline of Sutton's clash with Arsenal after a betting website had offered odds on him doing so. What happened didn't make us look very professional, said club manager Paul Doswell, or at least that's what I thought he said. It was hard to make it out through all the pie. Shaw began eating the pie during the 83rd minute, and in a way, who can blame him? Who doesn't like a pie at the end of the day? Or, if you're a footballer, who doesn't like a pie at the end of the day, at the end of the day? A new chant has sprung up on the terraces. Who ate all the pies? Who ate all the pies? Because he's wanted for questioning. If anyone is into gambling, by the way, the odds on me eating a beef Wellington during tonight's news quiz are 6-1. And I'm not saying you should definitely put a bet on, but I am wearing my eating trousers. 2 points to Charlie. Sarah, have a listen to this. Oh. Sarah, whose new discovery is out of this world?
Oh, I love this story. This is such an exciting story. NASA have discovered a new exoplanet, which is basically a group of planets that are clustered around their own star, so they have their own sun. And what's very exciting about this is that they think that some of these planets in what they call the Goldilocks zone, in that they're not so close to the sun that they're going to be too hot, and they're not too far away that they're just going to be ice. So they think that there's going to be water there that could be inhabitable, that could sustain life. So it's obviously incredibly exciting. But there is this part of me that just kind of feels really bad for any life that is there, because I feel like if we do go there, we're just so going to trash that as well. You know, you just... I feel like we're like squatters at this warehouse rave and someone's gone, there's another warehouse!
How many of these planets are there?
Seven.
Seven. How many could have life on them?
I think they said maybe three, but they said they've got an incredibly tight orbit around the sun. So the orbit that Mercury has around our sun, all seven planets. So the planets are so close together that if you were on the surface of one of them, you'd be able to see the ecology of the others. You'd be able to see weather patterns. You'd be able to see mountains, oceans. That's how close the planets are bunched together, incredibly tight orbit.
It's all very well unless they enjoy playing house music till 4 a.m.
Exactly.
Are you into science like this, Charlie?
I am, but they often come up with these stories, and you look at it, you think, that's interesting, and then you think, no, there's no life on there. That's all, well, I always think. I think the kind of the likes of NASA and the people who own these very expensive telescopes, they come up with this stuff every now and then to make sure someone will keep giving them some money to make it look really exciting what they're doing, which it is. But the only way, really, because that's how we understand the whole of existence, is by studying the stars. But the only way you could make that attractive to the ordinary person is to say, well, there might be some aliens there and some life, so we all get terribly excited.
Until they find a planet that's already got a Costa on it. You know, I won't believe it. It would be awful as well. Imagine in the next 4 years, if they do make the trip to Earth and we have to go, when they say, take us to your leader, we're like, yeah, sorry, this guy.
For about a 5-year period in my early 20s, I was quite concerned about the possibility of alien abduction. Quite concerned, because...
You were worried that you might abduct an alien?
Yes. I was worried I might be abducted.
Right.
I genuinely think about what I would do if I ended up being abducted. I think I've decided I'd quite like it. I think I'd quite like it. I think I would treat it like just going anywhere new. You know, I'd be resistant, but at the same time open to new experiences, because they might have things that would help us, and I think I'd be the right person
to sort of be a conduit disseminate between them and us.
And I'd make a cracking fringe show. I mean, that's the whole point.
Well, maybe this is what's happened. Maybe you were abducted by aliens, Susan, and everything that you say now, you are disseminating basically alien propaganda.
I wasn't probed. No, you would know that. You would know it if they'd been inside you. You would know it, wouldn't you?
Well, would you?
Yeah, you'd know it. You can tell if someone... Well, you can tell.
Yeah, we might just feel a bit funny. It'd be like being under general anaesthetic. You think, you know, you don't really know what's going on, do you?
But you'd...
Look, I don't want to make you feel paranoid, Susan, but I think it's well worth you considering the possibility of being abducted by aliens, and a lot
strange...
of the opinions you express aren't your own. They are...
A birthmark. This is something that no one knows apart from that goes from
apart
my
from
belly button. That's a line that looks like I've been opened up surgically. Oh my God! I was abducted by aliens.
Well, that's worth knowing, isn't it? Righteously, this is the news that scientists have discovered seven planets around a nearby star, three of which could support alien life. Although, given no one so much as popped round to invite us to a barbecue, you've got to ask, should we take the hint? Three of the planets lie in the habitable area known as the Goldilocks zone, which means it's not too hot, not too cold, and entirely covered in porridge. The discovery has come with another unexpected bonus, as Theresa May is on a rocket ship to TRAPPIST-1E as we speak to meet Morg, the many-headed destroyer, who she describes as an Anglophile who is 100% committed to NATO. Any aliens discovered are expected to be invited to Earth in a gesture of intergalactic solidarity, but only if their spouse earns over $18,600. Still, it's natural to be excited about this, but it's not all about the results. Perhaps the real habitable exoplanets were the friends we made along the way. 2 points to Sarah. Lucy, whose bush is so out of control that they've had to call the army in?
This is actually a really terrifying story. This came up in the Irish Parliament this week, that the rhododendron is engulfing the west coast of Ireland. Someone called Michael Healy-Ray, who is like a sort of superstar Irish politician, he said, the rhododendron situation in Killarney National Park has become so bad that nothing short of calling in the army is going to put it right. Anyway, so the same guy, Mr. Healy-Ray, also said that the deer population had exploded in recent years, which makes it sound more exciting than it actually is. But they've said that there's currently a deer cull happening in the national park, which you feel sorry for children being taken out for a lovely walk in the park, stumbling across members of the army tearing up flowers and shooting Bambi. Seriously, the rhododendron brought over to the UK, and it's now become this huge problem in Ireland. And in 2014, there were a couple who became trapped in a rhododendron forest and needed to be rescued. And I was looking at the rhododendron near us, and I was like, how could you... Only Susan and I could become trapped in a rhododendron forest.
They can grow, up to 25 feet tall.
I know, it turns out.
We could get trapped in a small hedge, though.
Do you remember our bonsai nightmare, Susan? Basically, it's the Japanese knotweed of Ireland, really. So, and it's bringing the nation to its knees. If IS really want to do damage, they don't need to bomb anyone. They just need to get a B&Q voucher.
That is the problem with rhododendrons. If you cut them, they will grow back stronger, which is why you have to win over their hearts and minds. Yes. Are you worried about this, Charlie?
Not really, no. I mean, it's a big debate, and you know, some people... The problem with invasive species that come in... Well, they're just better than some of our slightly crappy plants. And, you know, there is an argument to say, well, just let them do what they do, you know. If they're so well-suited to this environment, then let them flourish.
Are you concerned, Susan?
Well, I wouldn't have been previously, Miles. I now am very concerned. Since I moved house and I have a garden and I've become obsessed with all gardening-related things. I have a loyalty card at my local garden centre. Yeah. 2 free hot drinks a month. They don't carry over. Do you know what the problem is? I couldn't even tell you what a rhododendron really looks like. This is my problem.
It looks a bit like an azalea. Well, they're just...
Overconfidently, this week in the Irish Parliament, a politician has suggested that the army should be called in to do battle with rhododendrons because the plants are taking over a national park in Killarney. The Irish army is currently deployed in 12 countries overseas, including peacekeeping in Lebanon, a NATO-led mission in Kosovo, and an out-of-control hanging basket in Chad. Michael Healy-Ray also said the park's deer population had exploded in recent years, possibly as a result of his use of landmines to deal with the moss problem. This brings back memories of the episode of Gardener's Question Time when Bob Flowerdew recommended the use of napalm as a way to control bracken. Over a 30-year period, the red deer population has increased by over 500%, but to be fair, so has the jut population. The difference is we don't interrupt picnics with our furious rutting. not as many, anyway. 2 points to Lucy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Susan.
Daniel Taylor saw this in the Albury Parish News magazine. Play bridge with afternoon tea on Thursday 23rd March. £40 fee per group includes delicious afternoon tea. But please bring your own bridge table, tablecloth, cards and pencils.
Charlie.
Yes, this is from Matt in Norfolk, who found this sign in the toilets on a train on the Norwich to London line. Press handle downwards to flush. Do not use in stations, except in Ipswich.
Sarah.
Oh. How do I say that?
It's one of those, it's a Norfolk place. What? Wymondham.
Wyndham.
You'd think I would have checked this out before reading it in front of about 400 people. What?
Wyndham. They don't use any letters. They don't.
They don't use any letters. Surprisingly and... hard language to learn.
Wyndham. That says Wyndham.
Yeah.
And that says...
Trevor.
And that says... Trevor Lewis saw this in the Wyndham and Attleborough Mercury. Rosedale Funeral Home in Attleborough to hold recruitment day. That just was not worth any of it.
Come now, Sarah. Come now. We all enjoyed
it
enormously.
I just feel embarrassed because it was...
Lucy.
This is sent in by Stuart Young in Bromley, amongst others, and it's from the BBC News website, seen in a story about the BBC's plans for bespoke news bulletins in Scotland. The proposals are in response to criticism that the current 6 o'clock news often features stories, for example on education and health, that have little relevance to Scottish audiences.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Susan and Charlie have 8, but this week's winners are Sarah and Lucy with 9. Before we leave you, here is an extract from an article in The Guardian about sound mixer Mandy Parnell, sent in by Alan Butler in Donegal.
Born in Essex, Parnell grew up playing with records rather than dolls. My parents had a greasy calf in Wickford and the jukebox guy would give me the old 7 inches.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Susan Cowman, Charlie Hickson, Sarah Kendall and Lucy Porter. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Corrie Corfield. The chair's script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Benjamin Partridge and Dahia Shah, with additional material by Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Jenny Laville. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.